war er auch dem Prinzen beigesellt worden. Doch kam ihm seine Pflicht sehr beschwerlich vor. Der Prinz wünschte nichts von alledem auszulassen, wonach er zu Hause gefragt werden könnte, ob er es in Russland gesehen habe. Auch wünschte er so viele russische Vergnügungen, als irgend möglich wahrzunehmen. Wronski hatte die Pflicht, ihn beim einen wie beim anderen zu leiten. Vormittags fuhren sie Sehenswürdigkeiten besichtigen, abends nahmen sie an nationalen Vergnügungen teil. Der Prinz erfreute sich einer, sogar bei Prinzen, außergewöhnlichen Gesundheit. Durch Leibesübungen und gute Pflege seines Körpers hatte er es zu solchen Kräften gebracht, dass er ungeachtet allen Übermaßes, dem er sich bei den Vergnügungen hingab, stets frisch war wie eine große, grüne, glänzende holländische Gurke. Der Prinz war viel gereist und fand, einer der Hauptvorzüge der heutigen Verkehrsverbindungen sei die leichtere Erreichbarkeit nationaler Vergnügungen. Er war in Spanien gewesen und hatte dort Serenaden gebracht und eine Spanierin, die Mandoline spielte, näher kennengelernt. In der Schweiz hatte er eine Gemse geschossen. In England hatte er im roten Frack sein Pferd über Zäune gejagt und einer Wette wegen 200 Fasane erlegt. In der Türkei war er im Harem gewesen, in Indien hatte er einen Elefanten geritten und nun wünschte er in Russland alle spezifisch russischen Vergnügungen zu kosten. Wronski, der ihm gleichsam als Oberzeremonienmeister diente, hatte große Mühe, alle russischen Vergnügungen, die dem Prinzen von verschiedenen Leuten vorgeschlagen wurden, unter einen Hut zu bringen. Da gab es Traberhengste, Blini-Essen, Bärenjagden, Troika-Fahrten, Zigeuner- und Trinkgelage mit russischem Gläser zerschlagen, und der Prinz eignete sich mit außerordentlicher Leichtigkeit den russischen Geist an, zerschlug tablettweise Gläser, setzte sich eine Zigeunerin auf den Schoß und schien stets zu fragen: »Und was noch? Oder besteht nur daraus der ganze russische Geist?« Im Grunde gefielen dem Prinzen von allen russischen Vergnügungen am besten die französischen Schauspielerinnen, eine Balletttänzerin und der Champagner mit weißem Siegel. Wronski war Prinzen gewöhnt, aber sei es, weil er selbst sich in letzter Zeit verändert hatte oder wegen der zu großen Nähe zu diesem Prinzen, jedenfalls kam ihm diese Woche furchtbar beschwerlich vor. Er hatte die ganze Woche unablässig ein Gefühl, als ob er einem gefährlichen Irren beigesellt wäre, vor dem Irren Angst hätte und wegen der Nähe zu ihm gleichzeitig um seinen Verstand fürchtete. Wronski spürte andauernd die Notwendigkeit, keinen Augenblick von dem streng offiziellen, respektvollen Ton abzulassen, um sich nicht beleidigt zu fühlen. Der Umgangston des Prinzen mit jenen Leuten, die sich zu Wronskis Erstaunen ein Bein ausrissen, um ihm russische Vergnügungen zu verschaffen, war verächtlich. Seine Urteile über russische Frauen, die er zu erforschen wünschte, ließen Wronski mehrfach erröten vor Entrüstung. Der Hauptgrund, weshalb Wronski den Prinzen besonders schwer ertrug, war allerdings, dass er unwillkürlich sich selbst in ihm sah. Und was er in diesem Spiegel sah, schmeichelte seinem Selbstgefühl nicht. Das war ein sehr dummer, sehr selbstsicherer, sehr gesunder und sehr reinlicher Mann. Nichts weiter. Er war ein Gentleman, das stimmte. Das konnte Wronski nicht bestreiten. Er war gelassen und nicht liebedienerisch gegenüber Höhergestellten, war frei und schlicht im Umgang mit Gleichgestellten und war verächtlich gutmütig gegenüber Rangniedrigeren. Wronski war selbst so und hielt es für einen großen Vorzug. Aber gegenüber dem Prinzen war er der Rangniedrigere, und dieses verächtlich gutmütige Verhältnis zu ihm empörte ihn. »Dummes Stück Rindvieh. Bin ich vielleicht genauso?« dachte er. Jedenfalls, als er sich am siebten Tag vor des Prinzen Abreise nach Moskau von ihm verabschiedete und seinen Dank erhielt, war er glücklich, dass er diese peinliche Situation und den unangenehmen Spiegel los war. Er verabschiedete sich von ihm auf dem Bahnhof, auf dem Rückweg von der Bärenjagd, wo sie die ganze Nacht russisches Draufgängertum zur Schau gestellt hatten. 2. Nach Hause zurückgekehrt, fand Wronski ein Billett von Anna vor. Sie schrieb: »Ich bin krank und unglücklich. Ich kann nicht aus dem Haus. Doch Sie noch länger nicht sehen kann ich auch nicht. Kommen Sie abends. Um 7 fährt Alexei Alexandrowitsch in den Rat und bleibt dort bis 10.« Er überlegte einen Moment, wie merkwürdig es war, dass sie ihn zu sich kommen ließ, trotz der Forderung ihres Mannes, ihn nicht zu empfangen, und beschloss dann zu fahren. Wronski war diesen Winter zum Obersten befördert worden, hatte das Regiment verlassen und lebte allein. Nach dem Déjeuner legte er sich gleich aufs Sofa, und innerhalb von 5 Minuten hatten sich die abstoßenden Szenen, die er in den letzten Tagen gesehen hatte, in seiner Erinnerung verworren und mit der Vorstellung von Anna und einem Kerl vermengt, der bei der Bärenjagd das Tier aufgestöbert hatte. Und Wronski schlief ein. Er erwachte bei Dunkelheit, zitternd vor Furcht, und zündete hastig eine Kerze an. »Was ist? Was? Was habe ich da Grauenhaftes geträumt?« »Ja.« »Ja, anscheinend der Kerl von der Bärenjagd. Klein verdreckt, mit zerzaustem Bart. Macht etwas. Vorgebeugt. Und auf einmal sagt er auf Französisch merkwürdige Wörter. Ja, mehr war nicht im Traum, sagte er sich. Aber weshalb war das so entsetzlich?« Wieder erinnerte er sich lebhaft an den Kerl und die unverständlichen französischen Wörter, die dieser Kerl gesprochen hatte, und kaltes Entsetzen lief ihm über den Rücken. »Was für ein Unsinn«, dachte Wronski und blickte auf die Uhr. Es war schon 8:30. Er klingelte dem Diener, kleidete sich hastig an und trat auf die Haustreppe, hatte dabei den Traum schon völlig vergessen. Ihn peinigte nur, dass er spät dran war. Als er bei den Karenins vorfuhr, blickte er auf die Uhr und sah, dass es 8:50 war. Eine hohe, schmale Kutsche, mit 2 Grauschimmeln bespannt, stand an der Auffahrt. Er erkannte Annas Kutsche. »Sie fährt zu mir«, überlegte Wronski. »Das wäre auch besser. Es ist mir unangenehm, dieses Haus zu betreten.« »Doch einerlei, ich kann mich nicht verstecken«, sagte er sich, und mit den seit Kindertagen eingeübten Verhaltensweisen eines Menschen, der sich nicht zu schämen braucht, stieg Wronski aus dem Schlitten und ging zur Tür.
Where are you right now? Of course you can't tell me, but I'll tell you where I am. I'm at Roskilde Festival in the international press area, sitting below 2 large umbrellas, and it's raining a bit. And you're listening to The Lake Daily, a live broadcast from Roskilde Festival 2023, and I can't tell you how super excited I am about today's broadcast. This is the second broadcast, and if you haven't listened to the one that we did yesterday, it's possible via The Lake Radio's podcast feed, or you can find it on SoundCloud. And I forgot to mention who I am. I'm your host today. My name is Jan Høstrækker, together with
Torbjørn Tarman Andersen.
Yes, that's right. And behind the scenes are a large number of Lakers that prepares, produces and communicates this live broadcast. So high fives for the entire team, especially our technician Rasmus that I'm looking at right now. I was a bit nervous that his computer is going to break down doing this broadcast, because unfortunately a lot of water ran into his computer just 2 minutes ago.
Our station is called The Lake, and we got water 2 minutes before broadcasting.
We hope that that we can carry through this broadcast, because there's a jam-packed program this next hour. Exciting content pointing both backwards and forwards in Roskilde Festival's program, and we have 3 guests lined up doing this broadcast. Guests from the community organization Another Life, first up, and then afterwards Danish visual artist Lise Heller Baggesen, that made an immersive installation that has transformed the Gloria stage into a colorful and meditative universe. And then finally, we have Turiya El Rabi from the podcast The Mental Cuties Club, who will talk about mental health at festivals. But before then, we're going to reminisce a bit on yesterday's concert, dwell a bit on what has happened. And Torbjørn, we experienced quite a few concerts together. Do you have any highlights?
Yeah, we jumped into the festival. We saw Big and Small. We went around the stages. We started with a Danish performance, cello and choreography dance. It was Jules Fischer and Josephine Opsahl, which was little bit aggressive, but also really exciting performance. It was on platform.
We yeah. s-
Should I just go through?
Yeah, go through.
We picked a few highlights. We're not going to read up the whole program, don't worry. We had Viano Antillo, so I'm a Latinx rapper.
Puerto Rican rapper, that was quite exciting. High energy.
High energy, great dancers.
Yeah. And then we had a really highlight for me at least, Kunatic, I think it's pronounced, Japanese trio, like psychedelic meets Japanese tribal music in some ways. And we have a track lined up from Spotify. I don't know if it's possible to play. The computer is still working. Whoa, that's exciting. The track is called Titian, and it's from the album Gate of Klüne that came out 2021. Let's put it on. Still some.
Oh.
Yeah. Catholic FM station. I like it. I say hello to you, everybody. God bless him. I like your everything. That was I bless him. Thank you. I'm a Rasta man, Rastafari. Thank you, everybody.
Yeah, and here we just heard Kunatic before our station ID, and that was a great performance on platform, where I just want to describe the stage a little bit. It's an open stage in Roskilde where people can walk by and just sort of drop in, and it was just fusing with that kind of folk psych and people sitting around all around the band in all directions. Our last shout out is for Danish Debbie Sings, which gave a really powerful clubby performance.
High energetic performance.
High energy.
Hyper-pop.
Yes, hyper-pop. Blowing it all apart with great visuals, great energy. Guests recommended. And Jan, you have our first guest in the studio.
Yeah, next up, let me introduce Lea Hedegaard, from Another Life. Welcome to our studio.
Thank you.
Can you quickly explain, just in brief, what is Another Life? It's a community and an organization.
Yes, we are a member-based non-profit organization, and we work towards creating better representation and better working conditions for women and minoritized people in the music and cultural industry.
Yeah, how do you normally work?
I think the sort of ground pillar of our work is the two reports that we have published, because before that there weren't really any data on how it's actually looking with representation and discrimination in the industry. So it was important for us to create that data to have a starting point for the conversation on how we change things in the industry. And then we use that work to make talks and workshops and work with organizations to help them better themselves.
So you would say those reports have actually helped you quite a bit?
Yes, I think so. When we published the first one, it was as if we needed to convince people there was an issue in the industry. And with the second one, the conversation was way different because it was this, okay, now we all agree that there's an issue, so let's start working towards solving that issue. I think it's really at least pushed the conversation, and now we are at a place where we need to see some action.
So what are you doing here at the festival? you were moderating a talk on Sunday?
Yeah.
And then what are you doing the rest of the festival?
Yeah, so I think we do interviews. We interview artists, both from the Arts and Activist program and from the music program. And then we have, after the festival, we have interviews with production, and we also have with guests. And this is at last year's festival, we did some data collection on how the audience experienced the festival. And we want to, I think, the good thing about data is that it becomes very, like, it's a very heavy argument, but it's also hard to relate to for many people. So this of using the interviews to create the more like personal narrative of how it's also experienced to be at a place like Roskilde Festival, to be here as a musician or an artist, and which kind of both good and maybe also challenging experience there are both at this festival and in the industry in general.
Yeah. But you've chosen also to talk to the artist and the production team, so like
a full circle. Yeah.
Also the volunteers?
I mean, a lot of the production is volunteer based, so in that sense, yes, also volunteers. We are going to do those after the festival because, of course, the production is very busy these days.
Can you tell us anything about your experience doing these interviews this year?
Yes. I think in general there is a feeling that Roskilde Festival is actually working towards creating a more diverse program. And that's also reflecting in the artists being invited here. also with the Arts and Activist program is that's being prioritized more and more and put on the big stages. I'm really curious about how it will go with some of the panels at the big stages later this week, because it's also a big room to fill in a festival setting. But I think it is a general feeling of being a bit more invited, but still also a lot of things happening, and a lot of the minoritized and women that we have talked to doesn't feel so safe walking around a lot of places. So I think it's also this of, then, you know, maybe you don't go too much to the campsite because that's not a really nice place to be, at least. Stuff happens out there. So it's a feeling of things are being pushed in the right direction, but we also have a long way to go.
So you sense, not just at this festival, but in general in the music industry, do you have a sense that things are changing a bit, things are going in the right direction, or it's just too slow maybe?
Yeah, too slow, I would say. And I think it's really good that the big players in the industry are sort of taking this conversation seriously, also with the new partnership between Koda and Dansk Live and big players. But I still have a feeling that we are at the conversation side and we are not really at the action side of it yet. We still need actions to back up the words.
Torbjørn, you wanted to jump into the conversation?
Yeah, I'm just really curious about this part, how it's going to be in the festival. Have you got any experiences from the festival yet? Because the art and community is it's a much bigger part of the festival program, and I think it's a really good and interesting step. I'm curious if you've got any experiences already you can share.
What?
From the program with the...
That I've seen?
From
the arts and activism program. So yeah, I had some personal things in the days, the weekdays before the music day started. But last night I saw the Jules Fischer and I forgot the show.
Josefine Opsahl.
Yeah. That performance, and I think it was. I think that was also the platform stage you just mentioned, and it's a really, for me, it was a really good way to sort of enter into the festival, starting out with this way more grounded, in a way, experience where you are together in a different way. Because I think, for me personally, it's sometimes a lot to be in this concert high energy mode all of the time. So for me, it's really good to have these spaces of a different kind of contemplation and being together in a different way. And I am looking forward to the conversation with the three Iranian artists and activists on Friday. It doesn't really have a name, but it's Babak Vakili and Melody Ghazal and one more that I forgot.
You remember where that is?
No.
No, doesn't matter. You can find it in the program. Of course. Do you have any other recommendation for the festival's program? It could also be some of the music program if you wanted to.
Yeah, I think in general my recommendation when being at a festival is that it's a great opportunity to experience artists you don't know, to expand your horizon, because we also tend to listen to the same music a lot. And I really like this possibility at the festival of sort of dropping into something that you've maybe just read about and it sounded interesting. So that's a more like general recommendation. And then otherwise I think I would recommend people to go to Mickey Blanco. Do that. If you weren't there at Loppen in the winter, then it's going to be a party.
That's a recommendation passed forward then. I was also wondering, how do you support the work that Another Life does? I mean, can people support by joining the community or...?
Yes, I think, of course, it depends a bit on whether you are a private person or come from an organization within the industry. But we are a membership-based organization, so you can become a member of Another Life. And we have different memberships, which are also like depending on whether you're a private person or an organization.
So
or
you
company.
Can financially support also?
Yes, you do that by like paying the membership, but you can also make a donation if you have a lot of money that you don't know how to spend.
All right, Leah. It is a tight schedule for this live broadcast. I want to say thank you so much for passing by our studio.
Yeah, thank you for inviting
check out,
us.
Yeah, check out Another Life's work if you haven't come across it before. Yeah. Next up is also a throwback to yesterday's program. Actually, what you were talking about, Leah, Jules Fischer, the choreographer and artist, and cellist and composer Josefina Opsahl, they did a performance on the platform stage, and we actually have an interview with them lined up. Am I right? So we're going to play that, and there's going to be some examples of the sound as well, the composition. But yeah, thank you so much, Leah.
Thank you.
My name is Jules Fischer, and I'm a visual artist and choreographer.
My name is Josefina Opsahl, and I'm a composer and cellist.
Josefina and I are working together for the first time, and we have been starting it in our own practices. I can say for myself, my research right now is very much about masculinity and also like the ambivalence of desire, I would say. So what you can see in this like performance is this a lot of rejection, a lot of like coolness, a lot of hardness, but also a searching for collectivity, for vulnerability, for intimacy, and I think that's where like I find art really interesting, is where we can like expand these spaces and maybe deal with the fact that we think something is really desirable and really disgusting at the same time, which is maybe what very much sums up my relationship with masculinity.
I can maybe say a bit about my practice that has, for the past time, been very much focusing on the balance of the real body or like acoustic sound worlds and then more electrified sound worlds, digitized like ways of constructing your identity and how these borders, limits are kind of breaking and bending and maybe melding more and more together. Nowadays, the foundation for this piece was made when I got a commission to compose a piece for Roskilde Festival, and then the festival was cancelled for 2 years in a row, and that was actually the same for Jules, was also commissioned to show a piece here. And so during COVID and lockdown, we obviously worked on some of the core elements for this, and it just became so obvious to me also with the like, who are we really, and how do we construct our identity? How do we view ourselves in this world where we only see each other as small faces on screens more and more? And I've been brought up in classical music, and I know, and I love this, like the discipline and the training your body to gain strength and to be able to perform whenever. And I think there's a beauty to remembering these like traditions and remembering your body and like the beauty of craftsmanship somehow, creating something, and especially like not just doing it solo, but doing it collectively. There is an immense beauty to that, and I think we need to reconnect in these communities.
So I work from a collage method, so a lot of it is found movement, meaning that I troll the internet for stuff that I like, or stuff that feels either like in this piece it feels like maybe ironically masculine, or like maybe it's like it's too much. But then there's also some of it that is actually sexy, or something that is not sexy at all. Like, or I wouldn't say people decide what they find sexy, but like a lot of folk dance, or like other sort of sorts of styles that I like to mix. It's actually very little coming from dance. So I like these very sort of normal movements, or pedestrian movements as we call them, and then I like to danceify them, or like to choreograph them. We also have a scene that repeats from a football, or like from a soccer game, just after someone scored. So I guess, of course, this is also part of my like research in masculinity, is this like individual winner mentality vibe. Yeah, so very little from dance, a lot from sports and other things. So the title is a reference to it's a sci-fi series, Westworld. It's also a movie, but the series is way better than the movie. And it's like, the concept is that it's an entertainment park where there's robots looking like people in a Western theme that you can then do whatever you want to, and then explore different storylines and stuff. And when these robots encounter something that they don't recognize as part of their coding, they say, it doesn't look like anything to me. So it's their fail-safe response to something that challenges their idea of reality. And I think this sentence always stuck with me as like a queer and like non-binary person, of being something that doesn't look like anything to someone. And both finding a lot of freedom maybe in that, but also a lot of erasure, and thinking about how sometimes some of the, also the performers we have in the piece and my own presence, can make someone question their own reality. And I guess, it doesn't look like anything to me would be the least violent response to that, but I still find it quite violent, the idea of being something or recognizable. So I think we worked a lot with that, like also in terms of the ambivalence, like always playing on what is, yeah, what looks like something to someone, and how do we define that for ourselves?
Bata zui, zolege biyekon tuka mekan vese.
Yaba baba, yaba the lake, sanga we wano to wano lomata tarana, the lake station. The lake.
So we're back in the studio. We've got our guest here. It's Lise Haller Baggesen. And Lise is a visual artist. She's made a contribution to the Gloria space in the entrance to Gloria stage. It's called A Space Where Your Voices Can Live. And Lise, you asked me if I wanted to introduce the space.
Yeah, I asked you if you could give from a visitor's perspective, like what is your experience of the space?
Right, so straight back to me. I arrived late-ish last night. We went in and had a look around the space. There's some really glorious fabric pieces that you've made, and they're quite stunning. They're hanging in the ceiling. It's very circular, there's circular motifs on the walls and the ceiling, and there's some sort of soft furniture, which was more or less occupied by the time I was there. So I didn't squeeze in next to somebody else. But I enjoyed like your fabric pieces. They look very silky, they're very shimmering. They have motifs of a slightly cosmic, but also something else. And I enjoyed some time walking around the space and looking at different angles, taking it in.
It's really just a big cosmic pillow fort, you could say. I mean, a lot of the motifs that you were talking about in the textile pieces are like resourced fabrics, some of them from my own childhood, like, you know, horsey, like bed sheets from my teenage room that I tie-dyed, and then, you know, like quilted. So it's a giant quilt in the ceiling, basically, and some banners, flags. So we're trying to create this very chill space that's also a care space for people in the festival, a kind of very comforting, embracing, and very, hopefully, very inclusive and generous space for people to hang out.
Yeah, because the care, taking care and care space was also one of your themes. We are going to talk a little bit about your inspirations and your ideas behind it, behind the visual elements you researched, and you got some local input as well.
Absolutely. So the title, A Space Where Your Voices Can Live, was actually inspired by this anecdote that my mom told me also when I was in my tweens. My mom has worked in psychiatric care for years and years and years as an occupational therapist, which also meant that as I was growing up, I was sort of like coming in and out of those spaces as a visitor, but also didn't feel as dangerous, I guess, as some people experiencing it. She worked in like some kind of like a therapy in Vivo called Brøndumskov that was very user-driven rehabilitation. But she told me this story, this anecdote about a space or a house that she visited once, where a woman, paranoid schizophrenic from like early 20th century, had built a space for her voices to live in, so that they could live together in harmony, and that so that they would leave her alone and stop bugging her. And that story kind of like stayed with me, you know, like as I was like became almost sort of like a mythical or a fairy tale to me, and very inspirational also thinking about the studio as the space where your voices can live. But then when at the invitation of Malmö Kunstmuseum I started working on this piece together with Anna Thomasen, my curator, we started doing some research. We visited St. Hans Hospital here in Roskilde, and lo and behold, the house is actually there. You know, like this, it's called Villa Desta, and it was built by the family of Palemona von Treschow. She was a very wealthy family, and they haggled with the hospital to build this mansion for her, where she could live with her voices, and where she could also have her staff and have big dinners with the doctors while the voices would hang out upstairs and not bug.
Well, I think there's a beautiful analogy in a way when you have a Roskilde as a place for music and sounds and voices, and,
exactly.
And you have a parallel.
Exactly, and also what I love about this story is that kind of like, you know, the destigmatization in a way, because in some ways it's so relatable, you know, like, and it's a very kind of like both like super creative but also very low practical, you know, answer to or like to some, you know, like some very pressuring, you know, mental health problems, you know. So I thought there was some beauty in that, and that has inspired the entire piece.
And that's hopefully something that will be passed on to the viewers. Have you got any experience yet of how was it to open up and see people start just engaging in their sort of little bit free-flowing?
It's been super well received. Like, actually, people were doing exactly what we were hoping they would do, just, you know, like, settle in and chill out, you know. I mean, we were, of course, a little bit nervous about hanging, you know, textile pieces up, but so far, I hope it like exudes some gentleness that people will get back to it.
And we have on Friday, there's a performance in the space. It's in Gloria States. It's at 11:45 on Friday. And let's talk a little bit about the performance. What's going to happen?
So in our performance tomorrow, we will have a score by performed live by Naima Carlson and Adriana Camacho. Naima is based in London and Adriana is from Mexico City. So if, you know, like freestyle improvisational jazz is your jam, this is really, really world class. And then we have five local dancers joining us. And the idea is actually, like, when we performed it in Malmö, we performed it in a very kind of like, in a very massive, like, old cannon tower, a very kind of like solid construction that we, you know, cozied up and made it into our own kind of like pillow fort. But the idea is that they are actually sort of like the embodiment of these voices that, you know, inhabit the space. So in a way that the audience are also their guests.
That's making a lot of sense to me.
It will all be revealed.
Can I ask something? It's jumping back. Mm-hmm. Words in the like chronology, but the artist Caroline Evans.
Yeah.
How did you come across her? Is her work exhibited anywhere? And how do you? Yeah.
Again, through my mom, yeah. Because there was a book about Caroline Evans' work. So to those of you out there who don't know who Caroline Evans is maybe the most underrated Danish artist. I feel like she should be up there with Over Tarsi. And Carl Frederik Kiel, she is a contemporary of Carl Frederik Kiel. She had, she was also like long time patient at St. Hans Hospital, and her pictorial universe is stunning. It's very touching. It's very naive and tender and childlike, but also very deep and cosmic. It's both very accessible and completely out there, like ahead of her time, which was early 20th century. So she's one of those, I guess, artists that people don't really know. But if you want to see it, there's actually still, I think, there's a patient museum in Roskilde on the old hospital grounds, which Anna and I also visited to do research. And I hope it's still open, but there was some talk about whether it had to be moved somewhere else or whether it had to be moved to Medical Museum or something. But I don't know. In my humble opinion, this is a piece of Danish like culture inheritance that, you know, like that we really need to, you know, take care of. Because it's not only about diagnostics, of course, but the people who have collected her have been, you know, mostly doctors. Yeah. Oh yeah, and my mom had the book when I was little. Yeah,
I think that the in St. Hans, the entire institution is now also like they've opened it up. I know that the Museum of Contemporary Art is moving out there.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
Maybe there are like stuff happening that could open up for like permanent exhibitions there, or even like a museum in her name. I don't know.
That is definitely the hope. I think she's long overdue, and I hope that there will be, you know, like maybe in, you know, in conversation with contemporary artists, or like I still feel like her work has such a universal appeal that, you know, like it's 100 years old. As a lot of it is about Christmas for some reason. She was like really Christmas fanatic, but it has that cosmic connection. I think
we are really looking forward to seeing your performance with Naima and Adriana. And that's, again, I'm just going to plug it again. It's Friday, 11:45 in Gloria, and we'll be there. Lise, thank you so much. You really told us something really exciting about your piece, but also about Roskilde and about this mental health and art. And
thank you so much. It was a pleasure. And I hope we could maybe give you a little taste of the soundtrack.
We're going to dwell into the performance you staged in Malmö with the Kunstmuseum there, the Art Museum. And it's recorded, as you described it, in this very rustic kind of brick tower. It looks like something from a fortress. And this is a version of the same performance we're going to hear tomorrow.
Yes.
And the score is by Naima Carlson and Jana Camacho.
Yeah.
And we're going to listen to it now. And thank you so much for visiting us.
All right. Thanks for having me.
And we are leaving a space where your voices can live, and we're going to have a track here, and it's by Melody Gasal. It's called Motivational Quote, and here it comes.
Fine someday, I will feel. has yet to come. The high of moving on, for a moment I'll be long, has yet to come. Motivational quota passed by on an Instagram poster. Need to give up giving fucks up. We'll find a home for this heart. 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 We'll find a home for this.
That was Melody Gasal, Motivational Quote, a single that came out last year. She also has a new album out called Mellow D of this year. And she's performing today, 4:30, on Gloria with a glorious band. I actually saw them on Thursday last week, performing at, that was her BA final concert at the Rhythmic Music Conservatory. Was a killer concert. I really recommend all of you coming to this concert. And now I hand over the microphone to Torbjørn.
Yes, we've got our new guest here. We're going to continue. Today's theme is around neurodiversity and mental health in the festival, and of course in general as well. And I'm happy to welcome Tourea El Rabi. And welcome.
Thank you.
You are from your organization, can I call it an organization?
The community.
Mm-hmm. The community is called the Mental Cuties Club, and you've got a podcast called the Mental Cuties
Club.
Thank you. Do you want to introduce briefly what you guys are doing?
My name is, as you said, Tourea Rappi. I'm an artist, and I like to call it the founder of the Mental Cuties Club. The podcast is about mental health, but also representation, diversity. People get the chance to tell their stories, which is very important to me. And in general, just to have some focus on that mental health is a spectrum and not a individual taboo or,
It's something that it seems like also is reflected a little bit in the festival this year.
Yeah. We are here actually with Repolitics. We've been here for 3 days now doing a Vox Pop where I talk with people about how they prepare themselves mentally before they go on a festival. How do you feel from a scale for 1 to 10 mentally? So like I try to encourage people to check in on each other in a simple and nice way. And also we had, like, I was asking a question about what is the hardest thing for you on a festival. So we kind of, like, these three questions was something that was our main focus. But we also invited some artists to be a part of some interviews about, we had, like, a rapper, Feluca, who talked about using her diagnosis bipolar in her music, in her when she like writes her lyrics and how it comes across as a therapeutic method for her. She's so dope, and her album is like so bipolar, and I love it.
in a good way.
Great. And you gave us, you said also one of the things we should maybe talk about today is festivals and boundaries.
Mm-hmm. I mean, we all know it's a very serious topic when we are here at Roskilde. Like rapes, just racism, all these horrible things that just are happening here when it comes to not understanding what boundaries is, not understanding how we communicate it out, not to understand how we take care of each other. And it always sounds so simple when we say these things. And that's why I'm trying to encourage people to actually have these conversations with their friends, either, now we're here, so they have to talk about it here, of course, but how they can, you know, instead of have to explain, like, this person just called me a whore, just for example. Instead of that, they have to explain this, like explain the situation to their friends. They have some kind of safe words, or right now it's a four, and then you can like leave, like, you know, like just leave the situation, go back to the camp, go to the rest toilet, I don't know, like just walk away from the situation and then have a conversation about it. Because when you're in it, a lot of us don't know how to, what to say or how to react. So I'm like, boundaries, again, like, it's also so individual, and some react very explicit, like, can have, like, this very aggressive reaction, not in a bad way, but, like, in a way where people might take it as, you know, you chill, or is it that serious? Where when you are vulnerable, and if you react in a more vulnerable way, there's actually a lot of people who would, like, be right next to you and trying to help you with it. But we have to understand that reactions is so different, and we have to be willing and open to be around that and also to support it. Yeah, I can talk about this for hours. So it's like
I think I love the that it's very concrete, that you're also talking about something very concrete, some tips, some what you should do with your friends and your community. Of course, a festival like this, apart from, we tend to focus a lot on the music and all the big names coming, it's very exciting, but there's another side, which is this whole big social scene where you put like loads of people together from everywhere, people travel in, people come locally, and from many, many places and many, many cultures. It's a very small space, very intensive space, 24/7 for a number of days. It's, there's a social side to it that's really immense.
Yeah, and I call it like the paradise of extroverts, because it's like they all like be like, oh my god, this is so fucking amazing, and I can party for like 8 days, I don't need sleep. I'm like, you're lying, but never mind. So when it comes to us mental cuties, we need to take care of us first of all. Reach out. If it's one person, just have one person that you can talk to. Earplugs, noise canceling headphones, sunglasses, a little snack in the back. Like, there is different things that you can do to like not survive, because I think it's a shame if you don't experience the music, because I feel like a lot of us, I call us mental cuties, we are extremely creative, and we also